welcome to this episode 61 of Crashcast with me, Liam Pritchard, and as always, Ross Alexander.
Hello there.
Okay, so for the last few weeks, I've been a little bit negative, haven't I? I mean, with all the PlayStation stuff, the Amazon stuff, I've spent most of the last few podcasts moaning, and I'm quite aware of that. So I've decided to make this a
We're not misanthropes.
No. I just thought we should make this a really positive episode.
Okay.
And I thought the best place to start was probably the announcement of the Nintendo NX release date. And the subsequent delay of Zelda Wii U or Zelda NX, whatever you want to call it. And while that might not sound positive to everyone, it's like, I don't mind that at all.
Well, you had pretty much already resigned to that happening.
I'd certainly resigned to the idea. I mean, there was no way in a million years that...
For anyone who isn't aware, it's March 2017.
Yeah.
It's the provisional release date. For the NX.
Of both the NX and the new Zelda.
Yeah.
And we knew the Zelda was never going to be Zelda Wii U. I mean, on its own. It was never going to be a Wii U exclusive. That ship had sailed like 12 months ago. I was actually a little bit surprised that they were even doing the Wii U. At one point, I thought they were just going to bin the Wii U version and just make it an NX exclusive. And you know what? I'm still... not 100% convinced. God, this almost sounds negative again, doesn't it? I'm not 100% convinced that they won't can the Wii U version, because the Wii U version has been such a financial disaster for them, despite being home to a host of brilliant games.
I
think, you know, they wouldn't say it now, because that really would be just kind of sticking the knife into the Wii U a year before the NX is released. But I honestly think that they might just quietly bin the Wii U version, but that's by the by anyway. The important thing is, while I appreciate this is going to be a terrible year for fans of Nintendo, and as we know, there are a few bigger Nintendo fans than myself, but I'm like, I can deal with that as long as they come out all guns blazing next year. And I honestly think that's what they're gearing towards. I think they're like, okay, well, this year's just going to be a quiet year, you know?
Yeah.
They've obviously still got a few 3DS games in the pipeline. There are still like a handful of okay-ish looking Wii U games. And obviously, I think this year will be famous more so for anything else than their mobile output. I mean, they recently announced that they're going to do, what is it, a Fire Emblem and...
Is it Pokemon Sun and Moon or something?
No. For mobile.
Right, okay.
What's the other one they're doing? It's... Oh, Jesus, I should have written this down. Fire Emblem and something else? What the hell? You know, Happy Home Design and all that shit?
Animal Crossing,
thank you very much.
Really?
Well, no, that makes perfect sense.
Absolutely. Yeah, it does. I don't like those games.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of those games either, but it makes absolutely perfect sense to have a mobile version. And while I don't think it'll be comparable to the full, 3DS home console version, I think that's a great introduction to the series, and it'll get people looking at potentially a full-blown version, which will inevitably show up on the NX, in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah, I think that's where they're going to have to kind of... like steer people towards their products by basically giving them a taster.
Yeah. And it's all about making them relevant again. It's, reminding people. It's like how stuff like Animal Crossing, it's hugely popular with the people who play it. And obviously in Japan, it sells huge numbers. But you still get the impression it's far from being a household name. And these are the kind of things, if you get the name out there on mobile phone and then get people talking about the game, then, more... Because all they want are people playing these games, because they know... If they can get people playing them, they're popular games. There's no and they're very well made games.
Yeah,
but obviously, this is all geared towards an infrastructure that we're still unaware of. Largely, we still don't know what the NX is going to be. We kind of suspect, obviously, it's going to be some kind of like hybrid system.
But,
we'll see how that works out. But the important thing is, I like the idea that they're just going to gear everything towards 2017. They go, okay, 2016 is a write-off, and 2017, I think they know as well, if they don't come out all guns blazing, because let's remember, by 2017, March 2017, how many PlayStation 4s do you reckon are going to be out there in the wild? Like what, 50, 60 million?
Probably, yeah.
It might be over 60 million.
Well, they've just passed 40.
Yeah, and we're talking a whole nother year, including Christmas.
Where there's a new Uncharted coming out as well.
New Uncharted, there'll probably be a price drop. We'll forget about the PlayStation Neo and what that effect that could have.
But yeah, come on, staying positive.
Stay on target. It might actually... I mean, that might have a large... Sorry, that might be a major reason as to why it's being released in 2017 rather than this year. Because, of course, we were all expecting the NX to come out... this holiday season.
Yeah.
But perhaps they're like, well, we'll wait and see how powerful the PlayStation 4.5 is, see what Xbox One are doing, and maybe they need to make changes. They're like, okay, well, it was more powerful than the PS4 and Xbox One, but, you know, do they want to release a console which, you know, comes out next year and is underpowered next to the, you know, the Neo or the Xbox 1.5, depending, well, it looks like they're definitely coming.
I mean, I don't know how much power factors into their decision-making anymore. It, for the last two generations, it hasn't really been a thing that they've been that focused on.
I'm just not sure if they can get away with that again.
I mean, the problem is, like, EA said that they would not make any games for the Wii U. That was a little while ago. And, you know, it's third-party support has pulled out completely.
Well, that's
and
what they have
it's,
to,
it's
they
been
have
like that for so long.
Yeah,
they do, but Nintendo has had the same, like, as far as I can tell, Nintendo has had the same problem for the last two generations, and that is purely that they are not bringing out games for their systems, whether it's third-party games, because third-party developers don't want to make games for it.
Well, there were tons for the Wii. There were loads of third-party games for the Wii.
But so much of it was shovelware, and so much of it was, like, the Batman Arkham Asylum game that had some cool features with the gamepad that had been kind of shoehorned in.
Yeah.
Or like Mass Effect 3 coming out, what, like 2 years after it had already been out?
They got all that wrong. I mean, that was, I mean, I remember talking about that just before the Wii U came out. Mm-hmm. It's like releasing these games was fine for like, I don't know, a month or two, but you knew that all these games were going to shift onto the Xbox One and PS4 when they came out. And of course, you're left with the Wii U being underpowered again. And that was the problem with the Wii, was that it was underpowered. And unless it was used in the correct... And don't get me wrong, Nintendo did some amazing things with the Wii. You know, people look back on that, like, you know, it's seen retrospectively now very negatively, I feel, especially by the core gaming community.
It wasn't just grannies that bought it.
No, it wasn't. Everybody bought it. That was the biggest selling home console of all time. What is that, like 120 million? Like, put it into perspective.
And then Ant and Dec came round to your house and played video games.
Yeah, of course, which was great fun. But, you know, the original NES, which a lot of us think of as being the most popular, one of the most popular game consoles of all time, sold like just over 60 million units, whereas the Wii U sold nearly double that. It's absolutely insane how, like, for all the criticism, everybody owned that thing. And some of the Nintendo games, obviously the Mario Galaxy games come to mind specifically, were absolutely unbelievable. But of course, third-party games who are just looking to cash in, suddenly they're releasing games which just look like garbage. You know, you had to put a lot of work into making Wii games looking half decent. And, you know, if you didn't put the work in, I mean, some of those third-party offerings were absolutely shocking. But
absolutely.
And as to how they're going to get the third party back on board, I have no idea. And again, you know,
I mean, is it their infrastructure? Is it that they need to have a marketplace where, like, because obviously digital distribution is becoming a massive thing. Mm-hmm. You know, Ubisoft and EA have their own, like, at least for the PC, they have their own online distribution service, and Ubisoft are integrating Uplay with fucking everything, which is infuriating.
Yeah, yeah.
The only good thing I can say about that is when I played Black Flag, I was able to unlock some cool backgrounds for my Xbox 360. But other than that, it was, you know, I don't know why they have to keep putting roadblocks in your way. But Nintendo have only recently just been like, you know what, we have this massive back catalogue of classic Nintendo games that we're not doing anything with. Let's put them out on a store. I mean, Microsoft and Sony don't have that back catalogue. Like, Microsoft did a good job with, and we spoke about this last week, with their Summer of Arcade, making new arcade games, and also their retro arcade, where they brought things like Tetris came back.
Yeah, yeah.
And things like that, you know, games that Nintendo have in their back pocket, and they're not doing anything with. Like, they could license it out if they want to, like Tetris.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, they could actually build a store that works. And I think that that's maybe something that EA would be looking at. Like, you know, big publishers like EA would be like, well, look, this, like, our new games are pushing into, like, the hundreds of gigs, potentially. And we need you to have an infrastructure that's ready to deal with that, because people are not going out to Game or HMV to buy to buy physical copies. And if Nintendo aren't ready to pick up that store, and actually make it so that people are going to buy games through the Nintendo Marketplace, then the big developers are going to have a, they're going to be hesitant to be like, right, yeah, okay, we'll make a port for you.
So,
speaking of that, I actually saw a new game store opening up in Edinburgh. I couldn't believe it.
A new video game store. Well, no, before you get started, because I want to hear about that, but just what I have it in my head, I actually think that's going to be how Nintendo are going to make themselves relevant again. It's almost similar to what you said. I mean, obviously, there was the new Nintendo program they were speaking about recently, and obviously the mobile integration for these new games. And I think it will be a stepping stone process, because what I think they're going to do is they'll have this hybrid console, and I think it'll be linked into the mobile gaming that we talked about before, where you won't have like an actual Mario game. You'll have stuff like
you get a little taster.
Yeah, like a taster, where it's almost like a companion game, which will lead you into the console, and then suddenly you've got the handheld version and the console version.
Well, so you've that's also something that Ubisoft especially have gotten on board with. Black Flag had a really cool app. Where you could do some of the in-game stuff with your tablet when you were away from your screen, or it popped out to be a map. There was even one for Watch Dogs. I've never played the full game of Watch Dogs, but there was a... I don't know if you ever tried it, but there was an app that I had on my tablet where essentially you were playing the cops chasing someone down.
I gotta be honest, I played about 4 hours of Watch Dogs, and I don't think anything could have got me back into that game. But I like the concept. But I think
the app was really cool though, because like someone's playing the game, they're trying to escape, and you have control over things like the traffic lights, so that you could disrupt them. Like you could make them crash, or you could bring up the pods that'll make them crash into them, or like send the helicopters or snipers. It was very, very cool, and all in real time.
Yeah, and I like the... I think the ideas are good, but the problem is I still think they feel like separate worlds. And I think that's something that Nintendo could be leaning into. That idea of, if you have these experiences, which aren't quite the full game, but they would have those kind of abilities integrated into an already existing experience. So you've kind of got this kind of like, Fire Emblem Light version, but then it will have abilities to integrate with the actual game. It's like you mentioned, rather than an app, it'll almost be like an app within a game. So you know, you're playing it because it's a game, but then you'll realize on top of the game, there'll be this ability where it'll say, oh, but this can also... connect with the full fat version on the NX, whether it be the handheld or the full screen version. And I think that's how they're going to bridge that gap, and people will be like, oh, well, I've already got this game. Because you're only going to get the app if you've got the game, whereas this I think is working the other way, where you get the app and then it leads to you getting the full game potentially. So I think it's approaching it from a different way, and of course this is just me theorizing, there's nothing to back this up, but I honestly think that's going to be the way that Nintendo are looking at this, and they're having this kind of whole infrastructure where mobile, handheld, and home console gaming is all integrated into one, essentially. And I think that's the way that they potentially make themselves relevant again.
It's a very token way of kind of going in the opposite direction of the rest of the industry.
Which Nintendo always does, but at this time it seems much more forward thinking.
Exactly. Yeah. Because a lot of studios have done away with game demos because they discovered that people will be more likely to buy the game
just to try it.
I found that you don't get anything. Plus, making a demo costs a lot of development time as well.
How many times I was just like, because there was no demo, I bought a game because I was like, well, that's the only way I can try this, and I was interested. Whereas other games, most games that I like the demo, I'm like, well, I would have bought the game anyway. Whereas how many times a demo put me off buying a game was much more likely.
It makes it untenable as a business practice.
Yeah, absolutely. But as I said, I think the interesting thing, and you pointed that out there about Nintendo taking an already existing practice and looking at it a different way, I think that's how they're going to, that's how they need to approach the industry. Rather than just being like, well, everyone's doing this, we're going to do something completely different. Why not take something which is already popular, which is already working, but then put their own twist on it?
I like the thought of them kicking the door back in and being like, right, daddy's back, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously I can't wait for a new... I love the idea that the NX is going to roll out next year, or it's going to get announced kind of towards the end of the year, and they are going to have all the big guns ready. Like, you're going to have, Nintendo, like Zelda at launch, obviously, but on top of that, you might have, God forbid, a new Mario title, because we're certainly due. We're all expecting something which is going to prove this is why you need the NX. You know, that's the big thing. But why can't that be a new Mario game? And then on top of that, it's like, what have Retro Studios been doing? Imagine if they come out, like, you know, all the new talk Metroid. About Nintendo. But if they come out with, you know, a highlight reel and say, NX is coming next year, and boom, there's a new Mario. Boom, there's a new Zelda. Boom, there's a new Metroid.
Yeah,
you know, people will lose their fucking mind. They will absolutely lose their mind.
They don't even have to have a new Mario, though. All they need is Galaxy 1 and 2, like, an updated version.
Well, that's one of the other things they said they were going to do, because obviously a lot of these games, if they can get people to buy the console foot in the door, how many people haven't played Mario Kart 8? Mario Kart 8 is one of the greatest games of the generation. Yep. It's an unbelievable game. Smash Brothers is an unbelievable game. It's not
unbelievable yet infuriating, but
infuriating,
yes,
very infuriating. But you can imagine if people, they've already got the console for one reason or another, you know, something down the line gets their foot in the door, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh well, here's an souped up version of Mario Kart 8, which the majority have never played. It's like that game, you know, and you just include all the DLC, suddenly you've got a Mario Kart game with even better graphics and, like, what, 32 tracks or something. God, and like I said before, I think I mentioned this a few podcasts ago. I don't think anything's been made of the idea of how big a concept it'll be. Say this is a handheld console hybrid, and they come out with that sizzle reel and say, "Oh, here's Pokemon. By the way, you can also play. You know, you can play it on your hat in your hand, or you can play it on the big screen." That will fucking kill.
I tell you what, as someone who has not been interested in Nintendo consoles for really the last two generations, that would probably be I've always seen Nintendo consoles as a secondary console.
You get
your Xbox or PS4 to play the big, like, the big releases,
and then you get Nintendo to play Nintendo
to play.
That's exactly how I have it.
If you can play Nintendo games on the move, that would swing me. I think that would be what I would need
the big games on the go. Yep. And there was no... I mean, because, again, people forget, like, the 3DS, sure, it wasn't as big as the DS, but the 3DS has still sold a shitload of units. What is it, like, 60 million plus? It's more than that, I think. You know, and it's got a great catalogue of games. I just think, you know, again, if you're combining these two worlds, if you say you're just buying it as a Nintendo machine, all of a sudden you're getting a shitload more Nintendo games. Mm-hmm. You know, if you take how many games... on an average, not these dark years we've had recently, but an average year, which you get across
dark
handheld and home console. That's
make
a lot
it sound
of
so dramatic.
I know. Right? let's be honest, 2016 is not going to go down as a fantastic year for Nintendo.
Yeah.
I
see it as them breathing in before they push out all this great stuff, hopefully.
Yeah, don't get me wrong, their sales over Christmas are going to be shit, but no one's going to be... everyone will forget, like I said, if they come out, they reveal the NX, you know, towards the end of the year, and they come with all the thunder, you know, they really go, okay, well, here's a Pokemon game you can play on both levels, here's Metro, here's Mario, all that jazz.
If they drop the Wii U with a decent bundle to around 150 this Christmas, I'd consider it.
And you should. And, like, that's one of the things, like, Nintendo should totally do, is just absolutely rinse the Wii U, like, really, like,
clear,
even if they have to take a hit on it, just because, of course... All the software they'll be selling on the fucking Wii U is all Nintendo stuff anyway. So just get it out there, because... But it's equally, though, do they want to? Because, you know, will Mario Kart 8 NX have a bigger impact if nobody's fucking played it because nobody bought a Wii U? So it's all tricky stuff, but... sorry, we should get back to your... I had no idea that a new gaming store is open anywhere in the world.
Don't get too excited. It is a game. But it's in the same end of Edinburgh as the one that already exists, but then they're talking about knocking that shopping centre down.
Oh, the St. James's Centre.
Yeah.
So where is this game then?
Prince's Mall. One above Waverley Station, which is how I found it, because I'm never normally in there, but I was going through.
Is it upstairs or downstairs?
I think it's the middle floor, possibly the upper floor.
Okay, I was going to pop into town later, so I might have a look. But
it's not open yet.
Okay.
But it's all new, which is how I know it's new. Otherwise, I would have been like,
a surprise.
I didn't know a game was here.
Yeah.
But
crazy.
You know that's kind of weird because physical media doesn't really seem to be as prominent. And
But maybe it's just, you know, it's just Edinburgh going against the grain. It's like there's
a
gaming cafe or a gaming bar which is opened in
I've heard about this.
So it's like, you know, go have a beer, go play an arcade game, which is a fucking great idea. I mean, I'll certainly be giving that a go. I mean, I'd prefer just a traditional arcade, to be honest, but, you know, we'll take what we can get. But if you go there and there's like a decent selection of games, then I'd definitely give it a go.
Absolutely.
I don't want any bullshit. Like, I go there and there's like fucking three arcade cabinets and they're all shit. You know, if you're going to do it properly and have a decent selection.
I'm just picturing that museum thing there, the exhibition that we went to, where you just walk in and you can hear all the sound, like all the demo modes, and it's nice and it's not too brightly lit. But
Yeah.
Oh, that felt so good just walking in there and being like, yes, this feels right.
Well, I mean, I obviously went to Japan last year, and you get a little bit spoiled, and you're just like, why can't we have something like this? And, you know, obviously Tokyo is, you know, the way you'd expect to see the most of it, but there really are arcades everywhere. There really are. And, you know, you walk past, and they're all like four or five levels, and there are loads of grab machines, but there's always at least two or three floors committed to traditional arcade gaming as we know it.
And Dance Revolution.
Oh, they were literally dance floors.
Yeah, well, it's like the Japanese equivalent of going to the gym, isn't it?
Yeah, well, there is...
Like, people take a water bottle and a towel.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've seen people in there with towels. It's crazy. I mean, they're there for the day, but, I mean, there'll be just a rhythm floor where they'll have the drums and all that. Those drum games are really popular. The guitar ones.
Like Donkey Kongo. Donkey Konga, sorry.
Yeah, kind of like that, but I can't remember the name. Oh, well, they're all very Japanese sounding, but yeah, I mean, obviously we'd love an arcade, but I still can't see it happening over here. But we're going to stay positive, and I'm going to do so by speaking about the games I've been playing this week. Before I go rattling on, have you been playing anything this week?
Yeah, actually. One, you'll be kind of shocked, because I'm shocked at it myself.
Okay.
So, I don't know if I've mentioned it on the podcast before, but I'm a massive fan of Penny Arcade.
Yeah.
They did a podcast that ran with the guys who make Dungeons and Dragons called Wizards of the Coast.
Yeah.
And it's called Acquisitions Incorporated. And I like it because I like their writing. And then what they've done is essentially every PAX, they have a tabletop session. So a bunch of them will get around the table and play D&D. Mm-hmm. And I had never played anything tabletop when I first started listening to this. And it was my introduction to what D&D actually was. And, you know, I've played Warhammer and Warhammer 40K. So I know how certain role-playing elements work. And since then, I've gone on to actually take part in a campaign that my friend runs.
Oh, cool.
Which happens to be a 40K campaign. Which is really good fun. But anyway... They have done a campaign using their guys. Like, they have characters that have run through the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a game called Card Hunters.
Yeah.
And it's basically like a digital version, which is a free-to-play game, which immediately made me think,
Yeah, I hear free-to-play. Yeah. But I think most people have that initial reaction.
That is essentially Dungeons & Dragons.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically the guys from Penny Arcade.
PC, yeah?
It is on PC. Okay, it runs in the browser though.
Okay.
So I think pretty much anyone could play it. I think, but it's basically just D&D. But it's not just the game. There's also like an overarching story. Pardon me. Where it's your dungeon master is a young nerdy guy.
Yeah.
Who's doing his best to give you the best campaign you can have.
Mm-hmm.
And his big brother keeps on coming in and bullying him and telling him that he's not doing a good job as a DM.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's exactly what you think of when you think of basically a guy who lives in his parents' basement.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he's a DM.
I'm struggling to
how he asserts his authority.
Picture this game. I mean, what's the kind of art style like?
The art style is amazing. That is part of why I like it. It's kind of cartoony. Mm-hmm. But in a classic Dungeons and Dragons type way. I would really recommend. It's free to play.
Yeah.
I haven't hit the paywall yet, but I think it's coming because I'm starting to have a harder time.
Okay. Yeah.
But you can at least play the tutorial camp.
Get a feel for it. And they're the best examples, I think. It's you know, where you can play it at least for a while for free.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if you do get into it, then I think it is fair enough, you know, if at some point that you do hit, as you say, a paywall. Because if you play it enough, then you probably should have to pay. And while I'm still very much of the mindset that I'd prefer to just pay for a game.
If I could buy this game outright, I would.
Yeah, well, that's my issue with free-to-play. I don't mind the free-to-play model because, again, like you said, for a game like this, which I wouldn't have tried usual, but now that you mentioned it, I'm like, oh, maybe I'll give it a go. But I would just like the option that if I started playing it and I really liked it and I could see the, you know, the paywall kind of looming in the distance,
yeah,
I'd like to have the option of just going, oh, well, there's £30 version and I can just pay the full amount and play it. Yeah. But it's just a shame that more games haven't got that option. I just, it seems consumer unfriendly not to have it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But yeah, like that. So that is Card Hunters.
Mm-hmm.
You have to sign up for it.
Okay.
It doesn't cost you anything to sign up. You just give them your email and then you verify your account.
But worth
it. And then when you click it, oh, absolutely. Like, I've only played maybe a couple of hours of it. I just started last night on a whim because I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot to play that.
Yeah.
But it's funny as well. The art style's great. It's well written. It's card based.
Yeah, yeah.
It's hard to explain. There's a lot to explain, but it's really simple to play.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The monsters are really cool.
Can you play it on MacBook as well?
I would imagine so. I don't see. I mean, I don't know if it runs. I mean, I imagine it's Java or something like that. Yeah, yeah. So
it's not exactly kind of.
It's not too intensive. Like I say, if it runs in the browser, you're fine.
Exactly. And they're the games I'm more likely to play because I'm never going to have a PC kind of capable of running anything even halfway decent. So something like that where I'm like, oh, maybe I will give it a go. My wife will be unhappy because she'll see it as PC gaming. She'll be like, you've got enough consoles. You don't need to get involved in PC gaming. Because she's always worried that next thing, you know, she'll turn around and I'll be playing Warhammer and that'll be the end of me. Or something, whatever the... You know, are people still playing Warhammer?
I won't let you drag me down with you. Because that was my problem. Like, I loved Warhammer. I still have one of the rule books.
Not Warhammer, for Warcraft, sorry.
Oh, right, okay.
Sorry, I apologise, Warcraft. See, this is how out of the loop I am.
No, I never dabbled with Warcraft.
No, I've never played it.
I haven't apparently the real-time strategy games are good. But World of Warcraft,
I never go into it. And to be honest, I'm still not completely convinced by the look of the film either. I actually think the poster looks properly budget.
You know that Duncan Jones is David Bowie's son?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Exactly. I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, that's the only thing that's keeping me interested is Duncan. No, not because he's his son.
Because Bowie shows up.
But, well, no, because
he is the Goblin King.
Well, there is that, I suppose. But I mean, the thing is, I've loved his previous films. I absolutely adore Moon. Have you seen that?
Yeah, Sam Rockwell.
Yeah. I mean, I love that film to death. And I know it wasn't as popular, but I really like Source Code as well, the Jake Gyllenhaal film. So that's what's keeping me interested at the moment is the director. I'm like, well, I love his other films, so you know, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. But nothing I've seen thus far has got me interested in that film at all. But there's me being negative again. but am I just playing anything else or?
What else have I been playing? Oh yeah, ongoing Dark Souls Torments. I've gotten a bit further since we last spoke. I think I've hit a new boss.
Yeah.
I'm discovering the new levels of disgustingness that Dark Souls can throw at you. It's really making me want to buy an art book because it's gorgeous. It's gorgeous and disgusting, kind of at the same time.
Yeah, but it's so imaginative as well. I mean, you look at...
It's the Maw Dragon, the Gaping Dragon that I'm fighting next. And
it runs right
just
to the
Google
game,
it. If you're interested and you don't know what it looks like, Google it because it's essentially... a dragon that's been ripped in half and then, like, it's just teeth all up the inside of it. It's very weird.
See, that's the thing. Like, I'm interested in playing that. I'm actually really interested in something very similar by, I think it's, is it the guy, what are they called? Is it Team Ninja? Yeah, Team Ninja, the guys who made Ninja Gaiden and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
They've released a demo on the PS4 for a game called Neo. And it's it's supposed to be very similar to Dark Souls in many respects, maybe a little bit faster, which is probably what I prefer. But it has a very interesting option in that you can lower the visual fidelity in favor of a faster frame rate.
Yeah.
Which I think is quite an interesting one. Again, I think it's a dangerous way to go. I'd prefer just to be good and good, to be honest. But my stance on Dark Souls 3 remains in so much that I do really want to play it, but I'm just not sure if I'm ready to play it now.
Yeah.
But I have, I mean, the thing is, I did finish Quantum Break, though.
Oh, right, okay.
Cool. Actually turned into, I mean, I liked it at the start. I think I mentioned it last week that I played a level and I was quite enjoying it. It turned out to be one of my favorite games in a long time. I love that game. The storytelling, the pacing, I loved everything about it. It's not like the majority of modern video games. It is very much them playing by their own, you know, playing to their own song, so to speak, again.
Right, okay. I thought you were going to say that because it's Remedy, they actually started developing it 8 years ago, so it actually feels like an old game.
And I also said playing to their own song. I'm pretty sure I just made that up. I don't think that's the saying. But you get the idea. But the thing is, it's never in a rush. You know, it's happy with the fact that it's what, like, with the TV show element, it's probably like 10, 11, 12 hours long. You know, it was for me because I searched out every last bit of extra information.
Right.
But, you know, again, I love the idea that it was an experience that I could finish in a week. Like, that was absolutely brilliant. I love the way the TV show broke up the gaming time. Like, every time I felt like I needed a break, the TV show would rock up and I could just sit back, watch that. And then, basically, I was always just playing it in shifts. I'd play an act, I'd watch a TV, an episode, and that was it. I'd leave it for a day. So it was almost like doing that a day, almost, where I could. But the acting's fantastic throughout. The visuals are amazing. You don't get that uncanny valley because, you know...
Well, it's all actual mocap.
Well, yeah, and the stuff in-game is good enough that it doesn't look out of place next to the TV show stuff.
Yeah.
But at one point, the storyline... Like, and again, I think the mechanics have almost got... People are like... It's hard, yeah. It's a relatively straightforward third-person shooter. Mm-hmm. But because of the time powers, you play it in a different way. Sure, you can stay in cover, but it encourages you to be a lot more dynamic and a lot more aggressive. And because it feeds these powers to you as you go through the game, you get that sense that you're getting more powerful. And on top of that, it changes the way you play. Whereas at the start, maybe you're still playing it like a cover shooter because you've got some abilities, but not that many. But
I know what you mean. I actually played a game, funnily enough, speaking of Warhammer earlier, Space Marine rewarded you for breaking cover and attacking instead of hanging back.
That was
back.
A surprisingly good game, wasn't it?
Yeah, I did enjoy that.
Yeah, surprisingly good. But this in particular, like... It doesn't tell you, you just naturally, as you get these stronger and stronger abilities, you find yourself really going into the crowd and, you know, you hear these radio chat about people like, oh, this guy's like tearing us to pieces. And, you know, you suddenly find yourself running around, you know, you'll throw, you'll stop time for one bad guy, you'll, you know, shoot another dude, you'll do, you know, there's like a speed run thing where you kind of slow down time, you can charge towards an enemy. You know, and it's very cinematic. You'll jump up in the air and punch him in the face. Excuse me. But I thought it got a bit short shrift because it works very well as a standard third-person shooter, but you end up playing it in a very different way. And I know, you know, other games in the past have played with time powers, but I don't think any game has incorporated them as well into the experience as they have here.
That's cool.
But on top of that, and I think the thing that'll stick with me is how good the story is. I was absolutely engrossed. And time travel in movies... It's a very tricky beast, as everyone knows. And even the best stuff out there, the more you think about it, the more likely it is it all falls.
Oh, yeah, Back to the
pieces.
Future falls apart when you think about it.
Oh, yeah, very quickly. Whereas this, they've really thought about it. And because they have this kind of rule in place, this is no spoiler, when people go back in time, they can't go back in time beyond the creation of the machine itself. And then on top of that, no matter what anyone tries to do, they can't change the past.
Yeah.
Because the idea is that the past has already happened, so no matter what you do, no matter how hard you fight, you end up just doing the same thing, and everything you do just leads to the same future. And they deal with it in such a kind of way that you kind of get to the end, just like, oh my god, I can't find the plot holes. This all kind of makes sense almost. they even dabble with the science, and I found all that absolutely intriguing. So much of that. You know, it's very rarely that I'll kind of go out of my way to find every last collectible, that I'll read every last email.
Yeah.
But
upon completion, Stephen Hawking rolled up to your house with an honorary diploma.
Yeah, and he probably should have, because I feel like I got a pretty good goddamn grasp on time travel at this point. But yeah, it has turned into one of my favorite gaming experiences of the generation, and it felt much a gaming experience for me, because I mean, you know, I love Alan Wake, and I love games which kind of put storytelling first, and you know, obviously the mechanics have got to work, and they do here, but
yeah.
This really is, I thought, a step up for storytelling and acting in games, because obviously in the past the industry has been somewhat famous for, you know, Hollywood talent coming in and maybe phoning it in a bit.
Yeah,
that is not the case here. You know, you can really see that everyone's committed. And the TV show itself, I actually really enjoyed the TV show element.
Well, I guess the actors have to be more invested. Like, you know, you hear about, what was his name? Tyrion.
What's his real name? I know. Yeah, everyone knows who you're talking about, yeah.
Coming in for Destiny and being like, that wizard came from the moon. Kind of falling flat. But I figure if they're also on the hook for a TV show as well, they'll spend the time, they'll get to know the character, because it's their face that's out there, you know.
Yeah.
They don't want to put in a poor performance.
Of course,
it makes sense that would maybe be a bit more committed, and it would make it shine a bit more.
Yeah, but, you know, whether it be TV shows or anything, of course there are examples of actors, you know, phoning it in at any level, whether it be video games or anything. But yeah, as I said, I thought maybe, you know, the writing, the performances all really came together in a way that few video games do. And, you know, they've kind of singled themselves out again, you know, on the back of something like Alan Wake, where, you know, they're real top tier storytellers in the industry, I think. And, you know, obviously when people think of storytelling in video games, they think of, you know, The Walking Dead now, or they think of the Telltale games.
Yeah.
But the Telltale games, yeah, sure, they're good at storytelling, but they're shit games. They're shit games. They're hardly even games.
Yeah.
You know, they're decent story. Whereas this really is, you know, bringing together
a good marriage.
Yeah, those worlds. And then to throw in a TV show as well, which hasn't really been, not in this way. You know, there was that silly TV show where there was like a video game which was kind of affected by what happened online.
The sci-fi one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The one that was on sci-fi.
Yeah, which was garbage. Whereas this, you know, it's all there. It feels very natural. Like, you know, it just kind of, you know, you don't have to look for anything. The act ends and then the TV show just streams. And you just watch it straight away, and then it goes into the next act. Sure, you could skip it all, but to skip it would be to miss the point. But as I said, you know, Quantum Break, I think that's going to be very high on my Game of the Year list. I really do.
Wow, that's a ringing endorsement.
Indeed, indeed. Yeah, if you do have an Xbox One, because I feel like it's one of those games where, even though it sold relatively well, I don't think it's had the fanfare, which it really deserves. And if you do get the chance, absolutely go out and give Quantum Break a go, because I really do think it's one of the best games of the year.
It was the first game to be caught up in this controversy surrounding Windows 10 for PC. So if you want to play it on a PC, I mean, I imagine there's probably hacks to get around it, or you could pirate it. Not that we endorse that, of course, but
if you pirate it, you end up wearing an eye patch, don't you?
Which is pretty cool. But yeah, if you don't have Windows 10, you can't play it, which is ridiculous.
It is a bit ridiculous. But again, this is why I'm a console gamer, you know, so we'd have to put up with this shit. God, that sounded negative again. Alright, staying positive. Alright, so I played a few more games, gonna go through them really quickly. Yo-Kai Watch I've been reviewing. Finished it yet, or the review itself. But I'm rather enjoying that. It's definitely geared more towards kids, and it doesn't have the depth of Pokemon.
It's very cutesy in Japanese.
It is very cutesy in Japanese, but the production values are through the roof. And again, another example of what can be achieved on aging hardware. Like, it's on the 3DS. It looks fan-goddamn-tastic. And though it gets a little bit repetitive, the game is so well made, and you can really see why it was so popular in Japan. And obviously, the ghosts and everything are much more ingrained in Japanese culture than they are here. So inevitably, it won't have the same impact. But it's a really well made game, and if you want to try something different on the 3DS, absolutely worth a go. Star Fox Zero, I've only just started playing that. Absolutely love that game.
Really? I've heard only bad things.
Really? Oh no, I really like it. Again, the control scheme does take some getting used to. But maybe I'm blinded by my love for Platinum. Who knows? But coming together of those two companies was always going to be something I was going to be interested in. And while I don't think it's going to blow anyone away, you know, I think it's a really solid game and it has a surprisingly decent co-op mode. And finally, more universally and unequivocally very good game is House Marquee's Alien Nation on PlayStation 4,
okay.
Which essentially brings together the kind of twin stick shooting style of was it Dead Nation, their zombie game they did a few years back?
No idea.
Oh, well, I'm pretty sure it's Dead Nation. And like Diablo style gameplay where, you know, you're kind of leveling up and you get loot and everything.
Okay.
So there's a very addictive hook there, and it looks absolutely phenomenal. If you're into those kind of games, Alienation is well worth a look. And let's be honest, House Marquee tend not to make anything other than very good games. I mean, these are the guys who made Super Stardust and Resogun. And Resogun remains one of the best games of the generation, as far as I'm concerned.
There we go. That's why I don't know them.
Ah, there you go. Well, I'm sure if you've got PlayStation 4, you're aware of Resogun. But Resogun, yeah. Alienation, these are two.
Well, I'm aware of it. It's just totally not my thing.
Oh, I fucking love Resogun. Resogun is so good. But anyway, getting away from what we've been playing, just a little bit of news. I guess one of the more interesting pieces of news, and one of the more surprising, was Alicia Vikander being cast as Lara Croft.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which kind of came out of left field, because everyone was, you know, all anyone was hearing was Daisy Ridley's name. But then out of the blue, it's just Alicia Vikander, which I think is an interesting choice. Of course, if you see her, she looks the part. And, you know, let's not forget, she's attractive.
Sorry, no, I'm just remembering the last conversation we had about certain things that a Lara Croft actress should have. And I assume that when you say she looks the part, I can only think of what you actually mean by that.
Yeah, well, no, she does look the part. Not in that respect. I'm not against that again. But it's an odd choice, because even though she won a Best Supporting Actress award at the Oscars for The Danish Girl, and she was in Ex Machina, and she's soon to be in the new Jason Bourne film, they still feel like this isn't a star name in the traditional sense.
No, not
like,
really.
You can't stick that name above a poster at the moment, at the, you know, right now, and it's to have any effect. The vast majority of people have no idea who Alicia Vikander is. True. And I guess on top of that, nobody really knows who Roar Uthag, if that's how you pronounce his name, is either, the director. I haven't seen either of his more famous films, Cold Prey or The Wave. So I think it's interesting that, you know, you haven't got a director with any, you know, mainstream cachet. And
who was it that did the first Tomb Raider? It wasn't Uwe Boll, was it? Did he not do one of them?
No, he didn't do those. He didn't. He got
it was someone awful. Oh, no, he did Alone in the Dark. That was Uwe Boll.
No, there was no one as bad as that. And it actually had pretty good cast. I can't remember who the hell
Daniel, I remember him. Daniel Craig was in it.
Yeah. And what's his name? The Scottish
Chris
guy.
Barry.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, they were terrible films. But, you know, these are, supposedly this film's going to follow rather closely the reboot. You know, it's going to be a younger Lara Croft and her kind of, you know...
Yeah, I'm totally on board with that.
Feet. And I'm on board with that, but it'll be interesting, again, because there's no star name attached. Of course, a big reason why the original Tomb Raider was so popular was because...
Angelina Jolie.
Yeah, Angelina Jolie's name was above it. Yeah. So, I think that's going to be... it's an interesting choice, and, you know, I look forward to seeing what they'll do there, because... You know, I haven't seen a lot of Alicia Vikander's films. I thought she was absolutely brilliant in Ex Machina. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, she's an Oscar winner. And, you know, she seems to be the new thing in Hollywood, I suppose. You know, the new thing, that sounded terrible. But you know what I mean? She's showing up in a lot of pretty major films coming. You know, Jason Bourne will definitely be one of the bigger films this year. But it shows a sign of maybe people taking video game licenses a lot more seriously. You know, off the back of something like, Assassin's Creed, there's a lot of buzz about that. And now all of a sudden, you've got a Tomb Raider film, which isn't reliant upon a big name. It isn't reliant upon a big name director. It's kind of like, well, is the script good enough? Like, that's what it's going to come down to.
Let's face it. You know, comic books have had this massive, like, massive blow up. And, like, a comic book movie is now almost a guaranteed success.
Yeah, but unless you're
the Fantastic Four.
Yeah, it was off the back of Brave Decisions, though. You take it for granted now. But, Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man was a massive deal back then because he hadn't made a hit movie in years. He was still
known... Kiss Kiss Bang Bang was incredible.
Yeah, it was an incredible film, but nobody fucking watched it. in terms of mainstream, most people just remembered him as being the guy who did the drugs. You know?
Yeah.
So, and now you look at comic book movies, more and more they're getting interesting and young new directors in to do these movies.
True.
And maybe that's what they're going to do with the video game industry, because I think that's the only way it's going to work, is by getting good directors on board, good scripts, and not relying on stars, not relying on the fact that it's a name, there's a Tomb Raider name. as they're finding out, the reason the Marvel films are so popular, it's not just because it's got Spider-Man on the front. Of course, you're going to guarantee a certain level of box office because it's Spider-Man. But yeah. if you want to make him, you know, Marvel big, the reason is because those films are fucking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, be interesting. But what else have I got down? Do you know, I saw on Facebook that you seem rather excited about the Punisher TV show being confirmed.
Yeah.
I gotta be honest, I thought it had already been confirmed.
No, I mean, you would have just assumed. Oh, yeah,
maybe
course,
I did just assume. Yeah, yeah.
But no.
But well, good news. I mean, I haven't finished Daredevil season 2 yet, but everything I've seen of it, I've quite enjoyed. Except for
Are you
Foggy.
Still kind of progressing one episode a week?
Yeah, I'm still struggling with fucking Foggy every time he comes up. And what's it? What's the girl's name again?
Karen.
Yeah, she does Madden as well. She can fuck off.
I like them both, but it's remarkable. Like, Foggy is too cautious, whereas Karen is... She's just like, oh yeah, I'll just break into this known murderer's house.
Yeah, and she's like the smartest non-fucking lawyer of all time. I just sometimes she does my head in a bit. She's a bit west, just like Foggy. Yeah. But every time it goes back to the, you know, the Punisher or Daredevil, and I really like Elektra. I think she's great. The fact that she's a bit of a dick, like, and you know, playing up on that idea, because when you see Matt Murdock getting with Karen, you're like, oh, but she's so wet and he's going to turn into a pussy. But then
I wouldn't say that about her. I'd say she's pretty ballsy.
Yeah.
She just makes really bad decisions.
Yeah. The thing is, I think those are the two sides of his character quite clearly. And then you see him with Elektra and you see, you know, you could almost, when they're all together, Karen, Foggy and Matt, you know, sometimes you can almost forget how fucked up Matt Murdock really is. And then you get those moments with Elektra and you're like, oh yeah, he is messed up in the head, isn't he?
But
you
know, he's not as messed up as her.
No, he's not as messed up as her, but some of the best stuff on the show is when he is toeing that line, when he's trying to stay on the right side of things, but you just know just behind, he is almost a head case, you know? And those, obviously,
same way that Batman is.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, obviously, you know, I'm all for a Punisher TV show. While we're on the subject of superheroes, I suppose, I've just gone to see Captain America: Civil War. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I'm not going to go into details, and you're going to see it this evening.
Yes,
but I can confirm that, as everyone has already said, it's brilliant.
It is well good.
It is well good, bruv. 5 stars, well good. It's up there with the original Avengers film as one of, if not the best Marvel film. I think it's that good. It might actually be a better movie than the original Avengers, but whether it'll have... The thing is, it inevitably doesn't have the same impact. Because, you know, that, remember the first time when you saw them all together, it was like absolutely amazing.
Oh,
but there are a few moments in this. You know, there's no spoilers here. It's all in the trailers. When you see them, you know, fight, that scene at the airport when they fight each other, that scene is absolutely phenomenal. And even though my wife actually found Spider-Man a little bit annoying, she said the only thing she didn't like was Spider-Man. I actually thought he was awesome. So it'll be interesting to see what you think of Spider-Man. Because
he's my favourite superhero, so I'm interested to see.
Yeah, I think it's cool as well to see a genuinely really young Spider-Man. It was interesting when we came out and Bethan was like, oh, what's up with Melissa Tomei being Aunt May? I mean, she's far too young. I'm like, Melissa Tomei is like 50 years old. And if he's like 15, she's more than old enough to be around here. I think it's just because she still looks so attractive. But it was quite interesting. I'm not going to say anything because potential spoilers. But I went to see that. That was fantastic. And equally fantastic was The Jungle Book, which is one of the few films which I'll say, if you get the chance, go see it in 3D, and more specifically, if you do have the opportunity, go see it on IMAX as well, because this is one of the big leaps in visual special VFX, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Obviously, you're aware that the animals are special effects because they're talking. You know, you're just like, well, I know animals don't talk, but they look phenomenal. But more importantly, like the world itself. Like, I remember seeing the trailers, and I had no idea that it was pretty much all green screen.
Yeah.
And you go and see it, like, this looks photoreal. Absolutely photoreal.
Like, the trailer blew me away, because I was like, oh, another Jungle Book. Oh, right, and there's going to be two.
Yeah.
Okay, oh, well, it's Jon Favreau, and I like Jon Favreau. Maybe it'll be good. And then I saw the voice cast, and I was like, these are some of my favorite actors. Yeah, this is going to be amazing. And then I actually saw the CGI for Shere Khan and Bagheera. And then I just saw the little bit at the end. You can't really see it very well, but with Baloo and Mowgli floating on the river on the back.
Yeah, yeah, it's amazing.
Willie whistles Bare Necessities. Bare Necessities,
yeah. Like, he's great. And then Christopher Walken is King Louis. Like, that whole scene is really
that's
good.
That's the bit I'm looking forward to most. Oh, like, after that
whole section.
After that, Matt and I at work just spent the whole day being, I want to be a man cub.
And roll right into town. Like, when I hear the song now, I almost hear it. And he doesn't sing it in tune in the traditional sense,
right.
But it's so impactful. And it's quite threatening. And there is this is a much darker movie.
Yeah,
and a lot more based, you know, there's a lot more of the book in it than the animated movie.
Also, a lot of white supremacy there.
Yeah, but I tell you, it sounds an odd thing to say, but the opening credits and closing credits for this film are phenomenal.
Cool.
The closing credits are amazing, but there's, you know, like now when you have the Disney films and it kind of goes around the castle and comes up over the top and everything?
Yeah, yeah.
They do that, but it looks like an old school drawing, but still somehow in 3D.
Oh,
and then when it comes out, it kind of zooms out and then into the jungle. And it's just, oh, there's something about the start of that film. It's like, that was one of the fucking coolest shots
I've ever seen. They had a similar one with Tomorrowland, I remember.
Yeah,
they did a futuristic version with Tomorrowland. I really thought that was cool.
Such a shame that film didn't do better. It's such a shame that the ending was shit. But up until the ending, that film was great. And it's certainly worth a watch, undoubtedly.
I do want to see that one.
Oh, absolutely worth seeing. Absolutely worth seeing. As I said, I really was disappointed by the ending. It felt somewhat underwhelming and rushed. But for a good hour and a half.
Oh, wait, are you talking about Tomorrowland or The Jungle Book?
Tomorrowland.
Sorry. Oh, right, okay, sorry.
But that gets really. But oh, yeah, Jungle Book, though, that's good all the way through. But yeah, like I said, that's a film for the big screen, you know, the biggest screen possible, and definitely one of the finest examples of 3D. But I think that is the biggest jump in visual effects, possibly since Avatar.
Wow.
But yeah, really good, really good. Cool. Do we have enough time? Where are we, 50 minutes?
Yeah, we're still good.
Basically, last week we were going to talk about it, but we just didn't get time. But we were talking about, you know, the most famous sound bites in video games. Basically, the idea came up on the back of, I was playing Killer Instinct Season 3, and, you know, how much I loved, like, I was playing the game, and you get, Ultra Combo! Or as you're fighting, you get,
Combo Breaker!
It's like, they're ridiculous. But they so got me into the game. And it made me think about all those cool sounds you get in games, or as I said, those sound or audio bites, which... Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, there's, you know, sound effects. Like, you know, if you hear a...
Hadouken!
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 Capcom absolutely specialise in it. Like, some of the best... like, even the way they pronounce countries. Like, everyone...
China!
Japan! Yeah. Like,
Brazil!
It's just part of the narrative of video games. It's just these...
My favourite one's actually...
USSR!
And, you know, even... I'd say the way people go down was just... You know,
yeah, the vaguely orgasmic noise you'd get when Chun-Li gets knocked out.
Absolutely. And I was just saying that maybe modern games don't have it in quite the same way. Because I was trying to think of, you know, some...
It's almost like a retro tip of the hat.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, when a game has that.
Because, you know, when I think of them, I was just trying to think of a few of... and, you know, I'm sure you'll have your own, but... beyond, you know, obviously 2D fighters, but I think of stuff like Gauntlet, and maybe because it's quite ridiculous, but it's like, Valkyrie shot the food, or Elf is about to die. You know, I remember stupid 80s stuff like that. And
The one that immediately comes to mind for me is the announcer for Unreal Tournament, where basically as you get kill streaks, he'll be like,
Dominate!
Oh, yeah.
Over! In fact, I can't even do the voice. It's like properly, like, over the top.
There was a similar thing in Halo, wasn't there? Double kill! Ultra kill! And stuff.
I remember there's normally like a little, like, it tells you the kind of map, it tells you the kind of mode that you're playing. Like Domination.
Yeah.
Or something.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, obviously, video games lend themselves to being a lot more ridiculous. Like, you know, one of the most famous sports games of all time is NBA Jam, which is maybe more famous for its announcer than anything else. Like, everybody remembers
Boom Shakalaka!
Is it the shoes?
He's on fire.
He's on fire. You know, nonsense like that. But it's not just, obviously, you know, what people say, it, and even the sound effects. It's, I think you described it as musical fanfare. Stuff yeah. like Final Fantasy. You know, every, yeah. you know, again, oh, you have to...
I had that as my ringtone for quite a while.
That's an awesome tune, though, isn't it? Awesome tune.
It was that. It was. I had to change it from the sound of Optimus Prime transforming.
Yeah, yeah.
Because whenever it went off, it would be really loud and it would give Kara a fright.
That's a pretty cool yeah. sound, though. Yeah. But again, like, I'm not sure. Like, maybe, you know, it, you could argue. Okay, I actually got a book on the. My friend bought it for me. Super Mario Brothers, the soundtrack, the original one. And oh, wow. what a masterpiece it is. And it basically, mm-hmm. you know, actually breaks it down in a very, what's the word I'm looking for? Not an educational sense, a very...
Analytical?
Analytical, we'll go with that. Analytical sense of why the soundtrack is such a work of genius. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, everybody remembers that, you know. So maybe it is just something about video games and something about the language of video games where we remember these things. I mean, were there any mm-hmm. that kind of jumped out at you? I mean, obviously 2D fighters are pretty famous. You know, everybody knows,
get over here!
Yeah, like that, get you know? Over here. The noises that the guards make in Metal Gear Solid
even just is a great one.
The exclamation noise when you get spotted.
Yeah, well, that and the snake thing.
Yeah, yeah, there's that as well. But that always becomes really tiresome. I really don't enjoy that.
It depends how good you are at Metal Gear, I suppose.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, that's another game where...
The sound that it makes when you equip and eat your rations.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's strange, isn't it? Because, you know, Metal Gear is a very cinematic universe, very cinematic series. But some of the most memorable stuff are those very video gamey audio cues. Like you say, when yeah. you are spotted by the guards... Yeah. It's used in Wreck-It Ralph, isn't it? When he's going through a box and he just picks out an exclamation mark and he went, blam! No, that game's got fantastic. But again,
I tell you what, not even, this one isn't even in-game, but just the noises that you'll remember, it's a very visceral feeling. It's like you can feel your nostalgia. Mm-hmm. It's when you hear the start-up chimes from the original PlayStation 1.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or even the PlayStation 2. Yeah, the PlayStation 3 one was cool, but it was like an orchestra tuning up.
Yeah, it was just like strings, wasn't it?
There's the GameCube one as well. Yeah.
I love the Dreamcast one as well. That one's great, where you get the swirl coming in at the middle.
When it goes, please buy me! Please buy me!
You should have listened. The Dreamcast is fucking awesome. But no, the PlayStation consoles are maybe more famous than most for those, as you say, those kind of audio introductions, aren't they?
Yeah.
But yeah, the PlayStation 4 one as well. There's something about, I think, the PS1 and PS2 ones in particular, which really caught the imagination. But it is strange that the GameCube one is always one... which I really loved. Every time I'd turn the console on, you got the little blocks going around creating the G. I thought that was awesome.
It sounded like someone pushed a musical instrument down some stairs or something.
Yeah, 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 totally.
It's kind of cool.
But I'm sure there's a million and one games I'm not even thinking of here, and I probably should have put more thought into this. Because, to be honest, I keep thinking, I write this down, and we never usually get a chance to talk about it at the end of the episode.
Well, you mentioned Mario. I mean, just the noise that Mario makes when he jumps or when he gets a mushroom that makes him bigger.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or just the sound of fireballs.
Or just him saying, it's me, Mario, hello. You know, it's like he's got like four words, but again, everybody knows him, don't they? It's like if anyone hears, you don't have to say the Mario bit. If you just go up to someone and say, it's me, like most people will be like, yeah, Mario, strange. Or just, the sound of picking up a ring in Sonic. You know, and some of the music from the Sonic games, especially, you know, Green Hill Stage and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. That could be a totally different discussion for us because I listen to a lot of video game soundtracks. Yeah.
Well, one of the big things about it is that unlike maybe a movie score, which of course some movie scores are some of the most famous, you know, pieces of music of all time. But with video game music, especially older 80s stuff, you would hear it over and over and over again because of the nature of the video games. And maybe that's why it's not so prevalent now, because a lot of video games, they're more of an experience in so much that you move through the games. Whereas, you know, you think about a specific stage in Mario or Sonic or something like that, or any game of that ilk, and you would have played that game fucking millions of times potentially. You keep playing, you keep going back, and you know, you die, you replay it, you go back and start the game again. So you hear these sound effects and these pieces of music over and over and over again. But
Christ, think of Pac-Man, the whack 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 whack
whack whack. Or the sound of Mario in Donkey Kong. That's got such a great soundtrack as well. Just the audio design of some of those classic, again, you know, 80s, 90s arcade games, where again they're built around limitations of the systems. But you know, you think of the best soundtrack, some of the stuff that comes to mind is, you know, the Capcom output from the NES era, you know, the Mega Man games. Like, how good is the fucking... The Mega Man 3 soundtrack is built around a very strict selection of technical limitations. The soundtrack is absolutely phenomenal.
I've never enjoyed a Mega Man game.
Have you not?
The Mega Man 2 soundtrack is incredible.
Mega Man 3 soundtrack is probably my favourite. I actually went back and played Mega Man 3 again recently. I think I'm on to the last stage now. Because of the anniversary collection, and those games are they are really hard. I think what's getting me through it is the fact that you can save at least, you're not just kind of dying and being like, oh, I've got to do this whole fucking stage again. But maybe we will do a whole episode on, you know, the sounds of video games. But I mean, you know, if you have any favorites, whether it be songs, whether it be musical fanfares, whether it be sound effects, you know, do let us know. Get in touch via our mailbag, via Facebook, via Twitter, via the website.
You remembered this week.
I know, I'm good. I'm getting better. I'm getting better in so much that I've actually done it for a change. But, you know, we're on iTunes, we're on them Androids. You know, obviously there's the website, brashgames.co.uk, which you should totally check out, because I honestly think
it's getting busier.
We probably review more video games than any other site out there. And you know, we really do review those games, which maybe games sites such as IGN, you know, obviously they got bigger fish to fry, you know.
If they
review Metal Gear Solid or whatever, they're going to get a bajillion hits, and we appreciate that. But you know, we're reviewing those games which maybe those bigger sites aren't hitting up, so you know, it's certainly worth checking out. And of course, it is home to one of the greatest podcasts on maybe on the internet, I don't know. Anyway, it is pretty
good. Pretty sure we're on the internet.
Well, you know, whether you agree or not, I have no idea. You've listened to, if you got to this point, you must like it to a certain degree, because you've listened to most of it, if not all of it. Yeah, we'll see all of it. That's pretty much it for me. Do you have anything else to add?
No, just thank you very much for listening.
Yes, thank you for listening. Thank you very much for listening. As always, we will try our very best to be back next week. I see no reason why we shouldn't be. But until then, thanks, I suppose. Cheers, guys.
Bye. Bye.